This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available if at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Said, could I rank my top five quarterbacks? Lamar, Josh, Pat, obviously. No, this is no order, by the way. Baker Mayfield and Joe B. Joe Shiesty, too.
Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill there. It's time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale. One location, toyotaofhollywood.com.
All right, Woody, thank you so much. Omar Kelly, Miami Dolphins columnist, as we're in OTAs in the new facility. Not new, it's a few years old, but it's nice over there. Get to learn your new system a little bit. Most of the guys are there. Great food. And everything's going really well. Guys are throwing the football a little bit out there for their little practices. And then we have this pop up. Why, Omar? Why rank quarterbacks? Why throw into it just for the heck of it?
You mean why not throw into it just for the heck of it?
Yes, yes. Why not put him in there? Yes.
One, you know, Tyreek likes attention. Let's start the conversation. Is Tua a top five quarterback?
No, but that's for you and I to say.
Okay. It doesn't matter if it's for you and I to say. He's not a top five quarterback. So nobody should be offended that nobody in the world puts him in the list of the top five quarterbacks.
The guy that throws him the ball every day, probably knows he's not a top five quarterback. I started the show the last couple of days with that, but it's probably doesn't need to come out of your number one receiver's mouth.
Okay.
I think so. You don't seem to think it's a big deal, right?
I don't care. I'm so annoyed by Tyreek and his attention seeking behavior that it's like when you have a toddler, that cries and whines, and I got one of those. They're going through some ridiculous phase where they just cry and whine at four, and you just pay it no mind. You ignore it. And that's what I do with Tyreek. Tyreek, and he, you know this. There are two things you should know about Tyreek. One, he's a troll, and he describes himself as a troll on his social media account.
I brought that up today. Somebody told me at camp yesterday that he's just trolling people, that nobody's paying attention to it.
Yes. And two, he's an attention hawk. When you're not talking about him, thinking about him, mentioning him, he's in his feelings. So he's going to do something that says, hey, look at me. We all know that kid in school where they make these, hey, look at me behaviors. And I remember Jason Cole, who was really my first mentor when I started in this business. He taught me how to work a beat. I always asked him, why are receivers the way that they are? And he put it to me brilliantly and only a way that I could describe it to people to help them understand. Receivers are different than every other position in sports, in all of sports, because you know what their job is? A running back gets the ball 20 times, maybe 15 if he's like a splits the backfield with somebody else. But a receiver, you know what his job is to do?
Catch
his job
football.
Is to get open.
Yeah.
And all he needs everything to work for him, and he also needs the quarterback's attention. So he spends all of his day, all of his life going, look at me, I'm open, look at me. Hey, did you see me on that route? Hey, I'm open. This guy can't cover me. Look at me. Hey, Dan, it's me. I know you done threw the ball to Clayton about five times, but hey, I've only got three receptions. Look at me, look at me, look at me. And they've been doing this since they were like seven.
That's been going on. Woody asked me that question today, and I agree with you. By the way, he goes, oh, who's the original? I go, oh, no, it goes way back before T.O. T.O. would like to get credit for it, but no, this thing. And by the way, I'll give you another one. Their job is to catch a lot of footballs for a lot of yards and touchdowns because you're probably winning games, so you want guys that are hungry that want the football. So I get both sides of it, yes.
They need opportunity, but they also need your attention. They need you to say – think about how many times you've seen a receiver tell Dan or another quarterback, hey, man, I was open on that play. How many times do you think a receiver has said that in his life?
Oh, no, he's had a whole bunch of them.
He has had
a whole bunch of them throw that. And now he's great. He was great with handling it, by the way, because, you know, he had always had, by the way, his relationship with Clayton and Duper was fantastic. Like, to this day, I give him a lot of credit for those guys, the way they all work together and their friendship to this day now that they're all in their 60s. But I do understand. But you're right, man. He is exhausting, though, because he's a top. He knows, right, when he puts stuff out there that it's going to become a huge story. And people, I see people writing, oh, this is his way of trying to get out of town again.
One, he knows he's not getting out of town until next year. He's a prisoner here, prisoner to the money. So you want the money, you accept where you are. And that's the reality. Tyreek is probably not going to be here next year. He's got like $40 million he's owed. There's no way they're going to pay him that unless he puts up 1,700 yards again, which, you know, should be his
goal.
Right.
By the way, you're right about that. There's no way they're paying him $40 million next year. You're right.
Yeah, no. He's got to put up – now, if he puts up 1,700 yards, I think we reconsider it. You know, we figure it out a way, Joe. You know, and if he's putting up 1,700 yards, we're probably winning like 10, 11, 12 games. Maybe not 12, but 11 games. But the behavior, you know what it is. And I think the best strategy is just ignore Tyreek. Tyreek's got so much drama going on in his life, he doesn't need any more attention.
So, I agree. By the way, nicely put. But everything you said about him, I totally agree. Because people are telling me, I don't follow social media, but everybody said he's very active on social media, and he likes to stay in the ball game with everything.
Today's era of athletes, if you're not active on social media, you're losing money. So Tyreek is one of the first that we're starting to Twitch and game. He's got his own gaming company where he's sponsoring gamers and for streaming. So Tyreek is ahead of the game from that standpoint. And anybody who criticizes him for what he's doing from that end, you're just not seeing the bigger picture from a business standpoint. There are kids out there that are streaming and doing video games and making millions of dollars a year.
I don't think anybody has a problem with that. I want to know he wants to be here, and we need him. And
do we care?
And
let's go. Do you really care that he wants to be here? Do you?
Well, if you want to be here, usually you play well. I don't know if I wanted to be in a marriage. It sure worked a lot better than not wanting to be in a marriage and just going through the motion. You know what I'm saying?
The motions. Okay, that's a very good point. I would think the money would be the main motivator and the main factor. But sometimes I don't really know what motivates Tyreek, because he could have easily gotten to 1,000 yards at the end of the season if he just decided to continue to play, but he'd rather let River Craycraft get some reps and opportunity and you know, steam on the sidelines. Me personally, but maybe this is my motivation, I would have went and got my 1,000, because I'm more focused on my Hall of Fame career, and I don't want a 696-yard receiving year on my resume.
Yeah.
But Tyreek was like, screw it, I don't care. And that was really his position.
Hey,
I don't understand it, but hey, because if I'm Tyreek, I'm thinking bigger. I'm thinking Hall of Fame. Your first ballot Hall of Famer, you never have to work another day in your life.
Yeah, I get all that stuff, and I understand, but man, he can wear your ass out, man. I'm guessing the head coach and GM are leaving it alone, like you said, right? Just pretending. If he's throwing a temper tantrum, they're just kind of walking away from it. I don't think they're saying anything over
pretty
there
much.
To you. Yeah.
No, pretty much. I think, you know, he's already – they're very, very, very adamant and committed that he's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
This isn't a Jalen Ramsey situation. Like, even if you want to go somewhere, too bad. You took the money. Now shut up and play.
Hey, you don't think there's any chance Jalen is back, Jalen Ramsey? You think he's still long gone, right?
Yeah, I think that's a head coach and Jalen situation from what I got. This isn't, you know, Mike's got to – I don't even want to say Mike's got to put his foot down, but, you know, they're not on the same program. Jalen isn't buying in, and Jalen could be the one player who poisons your culture. So you got to move. You got to move him. If you want to give yourself a chance. Unfortunately, the talent – I don't, you know, could there be a come to Jesus moment? Highly doubt it.
Yeah, I don't think so, but, man. I was just looking at that personality, and I just didn't see any sign of that last year. I'm with you.
No.
Too
Jalen
much pride
is not
and ego, man. Like, hell no. You checked out, no. Whatever Chris said, that's it, man. Well, I like you, and I don't like you, and all that. It's like, okay.
I don't know if it's a I don't like you situation. Jalen is one of those players who is thinking about Hall of Fame, and he is thinking about his body of work, and he's not interested in playing for a team that's rebuilding, even though they won't say that they're rebuilding. That's the reality is you're rebuilding. And Jalen has no interest in being any part of that.
You don't really you're flat out just called this a rebuild. You realize that's going to get everything stirred up because
I don't care. I've been here.
I'm not talking about with the team. I'm just talking fans going, whoa, I thought we were still in it to win it. And you're going, it's
You're the way you've done business is clearly not in it to win it. And I don't disagree with you because it was like putting a Band-Aid on a hemorrhaging patient. Like, you're not going to do nothing. Like, so, you know, this is a you got to change your diet. You got to wake up at 5 a.m. and start changing your behavior. You got to put the salt away. You got to make major changes, Joe.
You think Mike and that coaching staff have had meetings in this offseason and said, "Hey, man," and Chris has come down and said, "Hey, guys, we're rebuilding. We got to get younger and build this thing over again." Because they haven't said that. They haven't come out and said any signs of that.
No, I think the way that they've done business is a clear indication of we effed up. We took the wrong approach. It doesn't work. We need to do an about face, change how, because this is a complete change of how you've done business all for your whole tenure. How do you do business one way for 3 years and then all of a sudden be like, you know what? I'm going to change completely everything. That doesn't work. I'm going to do something completely different.
Yeah.
And there's no other way to look at what they've done this offseason.
Wow. Well,
it's a complete about face. And you know, people ask me all the time, you know, why are the Dolphins consistently where they are, consistently average? And the argument that I make to them is, there's no continuity in the organization. And even now that you have the same GM and the same head coach, there's no continuity because you're changing how you do things and do business.
Right.
And
I agree. I agree with this part. Yeah.
Maybe that's a, you know, it's probably the right pivot, but, you know, it's probably at the right time because pouring money into this situation wasn't going to fix it.
I think they poured so much money into this thing last year, especially right before the season when all the contracts and extensions.
Yep.
And I think somebody finally put their hand up, somebody between Brandon Shore and said, enough is enough. We're done. You make it work, and you're going to make it work on a budget, but you better make sure you tell 84, 85-year-old Stephen Ross we're still trying to win, because I know Mr. Ross does not want to hear about a rebuild right now. And if he does, and if that's the case, then he might as well just get rid of people right now.
I don't think he is naive to the fact that he's probably going to have to make changes if they're not already researching what they're going to do if things go left. You're making a mistake. But I say this to people, and I said this yesterday on Twitter, and it got everybody in a hornet's nest because they just don't understand why I can't give up on the season before they even begin OTAs. You know, there are about four things you could do that could get you into the 10 to 12 win territory. You can get to 2,300 rushing yards like you had in 2023. You can have these wide receivers get back to being 3,000-yard producers. They have the talent. They have the speed. You know, you just got to get them better protection. That starts with the offensive line. You can keep your quarterback healthy. You know, that would be a good start. And I know that a lot of that is out of their control, but hey, maybe if you put together a respectable offensive line instead of one that everybody's laughing at in the NFL, maybe you give yourself a chance. I still think that there's depth issues on that offensive line. I would love for you to sign an Isaiah Wynn, because right now Liam Eichenberg is your sixth man on your offensive line. So he's one injury away from being a starter. So if that doesn't scare you, then you have a problem. And Jalen Phillips, Bradley Chubb, Chop Robinson, that trio, if they each come to 8 to 10 sacks apiece and get you back to the pass rushing team that you were in 2023 when you had 54 franchise setting 54 sacks, you will be a force from a defensive standpoint. Now, of course, you need cornerbacks that can cover and hold you up, but you know, it's all possible. Things gotta work your way, and you gotta get lucky from an injury standpoint. Tua's developed every year. Tua's gotten better every year. You know what you have to do. You have to keep him healthy. How about you run the ball? How about you give him more than two Mississippis to throw the ball?
Yeah.
Those are my starting points.
Wow. Well, you just flat out called it here before we got to minicamp. You just called it a rebuild, and I you're the first one, because I haven't heard anybody around there saying that. They're still saying, oh, no, if we keep our front liners and we can develop a couple of these draft picks and they can make an instant impact. By the way, I'm really excited. You know, I'm crazy of all the guys, because we keep going. I'm really excited about seeing this Jordan Phillips, the first fifth-round pick that they had, a defensive lineman, and how he fits in. You expect
Jordan Phillips?
Yeah.
No, I don't expect him to be – anything special. I think he's a rotational guy. Jonah, I can't say his name properly, and nobody is saying his name properly in the market. I don't think it's that. I'm not going to try. I think he's the most valuable rookie, because if he's not good, the season's not good. I think we could get by with just about everything else going average, but he has to be good, and let's cross our fingers and pray.
Yeah,
and I'm curious about the safety too, because as I've told you many times, Joe, a rookie's ended up starting at the safety spot many, many, many years, going back to Chris Clemon years, going back to, you know, I forget who the young players before Yetil Green. There were some rookies Chris Clemon started Yetil Green. So yeah, so I think that he's got a just as equal amount of an opportunity to start as Ashton Davis and the other guy, if he.
Wow. So you agree with Vegas, the over-under on the 8.5 wins. Which side are you on?
Ooh, 8.5 is their number, huh?
Yeah.
If things go left and they quit on Mike – that's the major question that I have about the season, and that comes down to leadership. So I need time to see this team. I need time to understand what makes them click, because you know, like last year's team, it was a completely different team than 2023, even though you had a lot of the same pieces back. You know, the feel of it was just completely different. The locker room vibe was just completely different. So I got to feel it out before I can make any prognostications.
All right. Well, listen, I'm gonna let you go there, man. You just came out and just kind of crapped right on the season with that rebuild thing. I've been kind of on this thing, so you know, like if all the frontline guys can stay healthy, which listen, I don't like the depth of this team at offensive line. I'm with you. I don't like the depth or what they have in the secondary right now. It scares the hell out of me.
They don't have a starter,
but they still got some good skill position players on offense, though.
Yeah, but one of my major questions: who's the leader in the secondary? Is it Cater?
Oh, it's got to be Cater.
Okay, is he ready to be a leader?
Well, he got more experience than anybody. By the way, anybody back there right now on that roster? Yeah, no, that's not kind of hasn't been Cater's thing. He's kind of looked up to the other guys, but
yeah,
he's asking to go from a third corner to being the lead dog for the whole group. So
yeah, there's a lot of questions and mysteries, and I don't know the answers to them yet. But that's what OTAs is for.
Yeah. Hey, Omar, as always, thank you. Thanks for coming on. I didn't know you were going to bring it like this today, though. Well, you brought it. Looked like you're on that first date, and you really like that girl because you got after it today. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
I do.
Baptist Health South Florida, man. People ask me all the time about their sports injury program they have. Well, it's one of the best in the country. Where do the pros go? Yeah, I'm glad you asked. Inter Miami, the Heat, the Panthers, the Dolphins, FIU, FAU. A lot of sporting events that come down here all use those great doctors that they put together. Not only team doctors, but the doctors that take care of every part of the body. You can't have a top sports medicine program until you get specialists and really good all-star specialists for every part of the body, and that's what they've done. Knee, anything to do with the knee, shoulder, foot and ankle, hand, back, hip and knee replacement, Achilles. I can go on and on, but these doctors get you back out, man, playing the sports quickly that you're competitive and you play. We do know this. If you're active and competitive, you're going to get injured. That's just a fact. Doesn't matter what age, and it sure is nice to have one of the top sports medicine programs in the country right here in South Florida ready to go for you with three great locations. And I hate leaving out all the rest of them. Doctors Hospital in Coral Gables, been operated on there 3 times. Hard Rock Stadium right next to the training facility. And BaptistHealth.net/ortho is the place to go because 595 in Pine Island Implantation, Broward, you're going to love that location as well. Check out Baptist Health South Florida.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grade, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grade, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You had a interesting question during one of the commercial breaks. You and I were just kind of talking. There was a question that Ira got in the Sun Sentinel a couple days ago and says, why are Heat fans so critical of what Pat Riley and the Arisons have done and will do? Does everyone in South Florida not see what the Marlins and Dolphins have done since 2003? Sure, I'm disappointed that this was kind of a meh season, but I appreciate the winning seasons, playoff runs, and all the continued excitement that they provide. And Ira says, including 2 years ago. Yes, it was just 2 years ago being in the NBA Finals. Even amid the misery of this season, I would argue the Heat delivered more satisfying moments than the Dolphins this past season and many more than the Marlins have delivered in recent years. Granted, the play-in is the play-in and a losing record is a losing record. But there also should be a degree of appreciation for a franchise that refuses to capitulate. It is easy to talk about tanking and rebuilding and the lottery. It's another thing to endure that on an almost daily and yearly basis. But what was the question that you asked me during the commercial break?
Who is less likely to still be running their organization at the end of next season? So next May 6th, who's less likely to be running the organization that they run right now? Chris Greer at the head of the Miami Dolphins making the decisions as a general manager, or Pat Riley as the president of basketball operations for the Miami Heat, essentially calling all the shots in the front office for the Heat?
Riley has not done an end of season press conference.
Not yet.
Maybe makes you scratch your head. Maybe you go, huh. Now, also, Ira had written that the Heat still have some ability to trade now. Teams that get knocked out of the playoffs have the ability to make trades, and maybe the Heat are in those discussions, and so he doesn't want to have a press conference. But maybe there's more to it. Maybe he is making a decision on his future. And it might not be where he says, I'm retiring, but maybe he comes out and gives you a date. Hey, I'm going to do this for two more years or whatever. My answer to you is, I think Chris Greer will be in his job. Now, I'm not talking 1 year, because I think they're both in their jobs 1 year from today. I believe Chris Greer will be running the Dolphins longer than Pat Riley will be running the Heat.
Wow.
Now, why do I think that? Because I think the Dolphins are very close to being a very good team. I know I'm on an island. I'm not relitigating that fact. I've been very clear about it. I still feel clear about that. But I think the Dolphins are going to surprise everyone next season. And that would make, obviously, Chris Greer going nowhere for the time being.
The team that has their over-under set at 8.5 wins.
Just said I don't want to relitigate it because I get all the arguments against it. I'm just answering your question, and I believe the Dolphins are a lot closer to being a very good team than people think they are. And I would submit to you, if they go to the playoffs next season and win a game, win a playoff game, how could you fire Chris Greer? Be a massive improvement, no?
Win a playoff game?
Yes, win a playoff game.
And then in the divisional round, you get slapped up by the Chiefs or by the Bills or by the Ravens?
Whatever, you lose. I'm not saying slapped up, I'm just saying you lose. If you win a playoff game, when's the last time they've done that?
25 years.
Were you in your teens?
Teens? I was years away from my teens.
Right. You were in single digits.
I was four. The last time the Miami Dolphins won a playoff game.
So how could you even consider getting rid of the general manager who gets you a playoff victory for the first time since you're 4 years old?
You don't want to relitigate, and I'll bite here because I want to go compete for a Super Bowl. I don't want to win a playoff game. I want to go compete for a Super Bowl. I don't think this team, as you know, we don't have to relitigate, but as you know, I don't think this team is close, even if they win a playoff game, to competing with the best teams in the NFL.
They keep the general manager after a losing season where they don't make the playoffs, and next season they make the playoffs and win a playoff game, and you think they would get rid of the general manager then?
If you are in this will be year six of a rebuild, and you are no closer to winning a Super Bowl.
Well, if you win a playoff game, you are much closer.
Not exactly. Context.
No.
Context matters.
You're not much.
Context matters.
What's the context? You haven't won a playoff game in 20 plus years. If you win a playoff game, you're closer to a Super Bowl.
You're closer in terms of what you've actually won. But in terms of how you've built the team and how your team stacks up to get against the teams that are competing for Super Bowls, it doesn't necessarily make you closer. The Pittsburgh Steelers could go and win a playoff game with Kenny Pickett as their quarterback. Are they actually closer to winning a Super Bowl? No, they're not, because Kenny Pickett isn't going to win a Super Bowl. Like, you have to build the team the right way. And the Dolphins 2 years ago, if they don't lose to Tennessee, could they have had home field in the wild card, won a playoff game against whoever it is that they played against? Sure. Would they have beaten Kansas City that season in the playoffs? Would they have beaten Buffalo in the playoffs? Would they have beaten Baltimore in the playoffs? No, they weren't one of those teams that could compete at that level. So winning a playoff game shouldn't be the standard, shouldn't be the metric. While it's great, it should be more than that in year six of a rebuild.
To me, it's a dramatic increase in productivity. If you go from not making the playoffs to winning a playoff game, that's not grounds for firing. You're saying if they don't win a Super Bowl this coming season, you got a clean house.
No, I think you have to show that you are an elite team. And winning a playoff game doesn't prove that. Winning a playoff game is great. I'm happy. I'll celebrate it. But it doesn't prove that you've turned the organization into a winning organization. It doesn't. You would agree. Right. There's teams in the NFL right now who are good enough to go win a playoff game. For sure. Good enough to go win a playoff game. Are they Super Bowl contenders? Perennial Super Bowl contenders? There's a difference.
I mean, you keep moving the goalpost. So now you've got to be Super Bowl contender. Now you've got to be a perennial Super Bowl contender.
Perennial. I want to be perennial Super Bowl contenders. I want what...
But you understand, if they win a playoff game and you clean house, you're going backwards.
Yeah. I do understand.
Makes no sense to me. Makes no sense to me.
I think it can
make sense. So after six years, you finally turn a corner and you win a playoff game, you'd say, nah, not enough. I wanted to win a Super Bowl. Blow it up. Let's wait another 6 years.
Yeah, because if your goal, your only goal is to win a playoff game.
That's not the goal. I'm telling you, you're closer to your goal when you win a playoff game than when you don't go to the playoffs.
Or you're just proving to everybody that what you are is good enough to be a playoff team, but not good enough to go compete for a Super Bowl. And there's a difference
but
there.
The only way to get good enough to compete for a Super Bowl is to take the steps towards becoming a playoff winning team.
Not exactly, Hawk. Not exactly. Think
you go from losing organization to winning a Super Bowl overnight?
Look at the Oklahoma City Thunder right now in the NBA. They had Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook was a superstar caliber player, an MVP
winner. Can't
do this
in basketball. You have to do it with football and make the analogy with Detroit.
I think you can make the analogy with Detroit. Detroit,
right?
Detroit had Jared Goff as they had Matthew Stafford as their quarterback, and for years they were on the cusp of being a playoff team, but for the most part a disappointment. Despite having an elite quarterback, the team wasn't built properly. They were never going to go and compete or contend, and they decided, we're going to trade our elite quarterback, we're going to rebuild for a season or two, and we're going to come back as a different team that's built properly to go contend for Super Bowls. And that's what they've done. But they were bad for a couple years, 2 years, with Dan Campbell.
A couple years?
Couple years.
When's the last time, up until the season before, that they had won a Super Bowl? Won a playoff game, excuse me.
Year, but I'm talking about
they were the ones that held the record over the Dolphins.
In their current regime. They brought in Dan Campbell. He missed the playoffs a couple years in a row, but they built the team the right way and kept him as the head coach.
But they went through baby steps to win a playoff game, right? A playoff game. And you're suggesting for the Dolphins that wouldn't be enough, that you'd go back to zero, to square one.
Perennial playoff contender, perennial Super Bowl contender has to be the goal. And if it's not, then you're spinning your wheels.
That's the goal for any team in any sports franchise, right?
Right. And if you realize the team you've built, which has been what I've been arguing for 2 years, the team you've built isn't...
Right, but in other words, if the team you've built is good enough to win a playoff game, you're closer to having the pieces to winning a Super Bowl. You're saying blow it up. Go backwards in order to go forward. And I'm submitting to you that if you win a playoff game, then the tweaking and the building is easier than if you start from scratch.
And by the way, the Dolphins aren't close to winning a playoff game, as evidenced by this past season.
I would beg to differ.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see, Hawk. All but right. I'm telling you right now that there is a clear difference. You can call it moving the goalpost, but there is a clear difference between building a team good enough to make the playoffs, which is what I think the Dolphins are, and a team built to win a Super Bowl. There is a clear difference.
I totally agree, but that's not up for debate. I'm saying if your goal is to win a Super Bowl, you're closer because you've got more of the pieces set if you win a playoff game than if you don't. Because that's a fairly good barometer if you're climbing up or climbing down. And I'm saying if you're climbing up, continue climbing up. You're saying I'm climbing up and now I want to climb all the way down the ladder and start climbing up again.
Yeah, if you can't beat Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, I want to climb all the way down.
I agree.
I want to climb all the way
down. But aren't you closer to it if you're a winning team?
Too bad. You've got 6 years. 6 years. Right, 6 years to be in this position now.
But now you're changing it. Now it's not whether you're close enough. Now you're just saying you've had enough time.
No, I'm pretty.
It's a different argument.
I've been pretty consistent with my messaging for the past couple of years on this team. I'm pretty consistent.
Oh, I get it. But my thought is, again, if you win a playoff game this season, you would have to acknowledge then the pieces are being built to go for the Super Bowl.
Not if you are nowhere near closing the gap between the elite teams in the conference, Hawk. I get what you're saying.
But then you're going to be further away from closing the gap
correct.
If you wreck it all.
Correct. You have to sometimes be prepared for the mud if you ask for the rain. I pull out an old Denzel quote for you. You got to be prepared for the mud if you ask for the rain. That's fine. You want one playoff win. I get it. You want one playoff win, Hawk. I get it.
By the way, David J. Neal says 1-for-4 is 250. So that does raise someone's batting average from 193.
Boom.
If they go 1-for-4.
Boom. Man, I'm just...
Which makes sense.
I'm just eating W's this entire segment. Eating W.
That's the first segment. W you've eaten this entire segment.
It is a fair thing to I guess, ponder whether or not Riley's kind of sitting back right now saying, maybe now is the right time to step aside. Because my takeaway, Hawk, and I told Cuno on Sunday night because he asked me on Sports Desk, is there any thought in my mind that Pat Riley's thinking about retiring? And my mind leaving last Sunday or last Monday night from the Kaseya Center had to have been Riley is seething with how that season ended, and he wants another shot at it.
Here's the thing. Of course he does. But he's also a realist. So if he looks at the landscape and does not see a maneuver that's going to get them any closer, then maybe he does go out and say, I got Jimmy Butler here. It ended poorly, but we did give it a shot. Two trips to the finals. If he goes and which is one of the reasons I think he's not having a season-ending press conference, if he doesn't see anything on the landscape that's going to improve this team dramatically, does he want to go into next season with Bam and Tyler?
Yeah. Also, when you think back to how Riley left the sidelines every time he did, it was after bad seasons. Remember the 2008 season, his last year coaching, 15 and 67 or whatever the hell it was. Again, David J. Neal, you're going to have to check that math for me as well. I could have never imagined Pat Riley, the Pat Riley, would leave the sidelines, would leave coaching, and his last season ever coaching was a 15-win season. But he did.
No.
All the Heat need to do, by the way, Hawk, is win one playoff series. I'll be happy next season, by the way, just so you know, one playoff series.
Interesting. Doesn't seem
your weather
congruous.
From the Demesman and Dover law
argument we just had.
Or two play-in tournament games. Can the Dolphins just win a play-in tournament game, Hawk? Give me one play-in tournament win.
Did the Heat have a winning season?
No, they did not.
Clean house.
Your weather from the Demesman and Dover Law Firm. Call them 866-954-MORE, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24/7. Partly cloudy. Oh, football season can't get here soon enough, man.
I mean,
I'm rooting for the Finns, by the way. I'm rooting for Chris Greer. Because everybody's like, oh,
right.
You hate
you
Tua.
You want to see Tua fail. You hate Tua.
I don't, actually. I want to see Tua succeed.
A little bit. You hate Tua a little bit.
Call them 866-954-MORE, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24-7. Partly cloudy tonight. The lows are going to drop into. I mean, this Quinn Ewers does look really good. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying, man. Call them 866-954-MORE. That's your weather.
Funny. I mean, I got a montage of my takes on who was the UM quarterback?
Tate Martell.
Tate Martell. No montage, strangely enough, on 4 years of you talking about Skylar Thompson. Huh. I talk about Tate Martell for 1 hour. There's a montage, lives in perpetuity. He talks about Skylar Thompson for 4 seasons. No montage. And he's going to do it again now with Quinn Ewers.
To be fair, Skylar Thompson needed Eric Ezukama on the field to be successful, and we never got that.
And it is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location. Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com.
All right. Thank you, Woody. And we go right to Chris Perkins. Haven't talked to him for a while, from the Sun Sentinel Dolphins columnist. And Perk, how you doing, man?
Big Joe. Hey, listen, man. I was listening earlier when you and Woody were talking about Dolphins making the playoffs for the self-driving cars. You know, self-driving cars are already here. I see them in Miami Lakes all the time. They were out in L.A. I saw them when we were out there for the Rams game. They're here. So when you're talking about what's going to happen first, Dolphins make the playoffs with self-driving cars, that race is further along than you think. Those cars are here.
All right.
Hey, Perk, how about flying cars?
No.
Which comes first?
You might have a race there. Maybe you have a race.
All right, so before you go all Omar Kelly on the rebuild on me or something crazy, the Perk, I do want to ask you. I want to get to this leadership thing because Mike's always talking about it's the players' team, and if you're really going to throw the team to the players, which he does as much as any coach I think either one of us have seen as a head coach, you do have to have some strong leaders. They lost some really good leaders. How do you feel about this group of leaders? I know we had some of the guys, Sealer, and some of the other guys talk. What do you think?
I don't like the leadership on this team, and I don't like the way that Mike has allowed players to take charge of the team, Joe. I like Mike. I've always liked Mike, but I think he needs to change some things. And number one is Mike doesn't have to change who he is. You can't come in here and try to be the tough guy all of a sudden. Mike just needs to be the adult in the room, and they don't have that. And look, after the 2023 season, Joe, when they handed out all those contract extensions, that's when I started writing about the culture of this team. I've never been in a locker room that is so relaxed, so jovial, so chill. Nobody is worried about losing their job. And you saw what happened with Adam Gase when that stuff started happening. He cut three guys. Brian Flores would not have stood for that. And all this stuff that you hear, Joe, nowadays you can't criticize players. I don't think that's true for either of the Harbaughs. I don't think that's true for Mike Tomlin. I don't think that's true for Sean McVay, Todd Bowles. It's the program that you run, and you can't operate thinking, I can't criticize players. These other coaches criticize players and do just fine. So, I think that Mike McDaniel has to take charge of this locker room. Those contract extensions, Joe, I've never seen a team celebrate money like that. Like Jaylen Waddle was so happy. Tua with the show me the money. And now Tyreek has to get paid. Now Ramsey has to get paid. I think this team focuses on the wrong things. Their priorities are on the wrong things. That's what I think is wrong with the leadership here, and it needs to be corrected either by Mike or by Chris Greer.
You know, I was thinking of – we played some Zach Sealer yesterday, and I thought it was really good, by the way, all those things. But so when I hear him, like, being late is not going to be – you know, it's not acceptable being late. And I was like – here's the problem. I don't know too many players are going to go out and call another guy out for being late. Like how many times is Zach Sealer going to go out of a defensive line meeting and go and say, hey, Tyreek, come here. Hey, man, not acceptable, bro. You were late. Come on, man. Everybody else got to be on time. That's a coach's job. I'm with you, by the way. That's a coach who's got to go, hey, no, man. We've talked about it. It's old. We threw it out there. Everybody knows. Can't go through that again. I just don't think players should have to take it to the next level. It's one thing you want to pump up a young guy and help him. That stuff's great. That's great leadership. But as far as when a guy breaks a rule, that's a coach's job. That's not another player's job. If you do, because then you know what happens. You go, oh, okay, now you're the company man. So now you're the company man. Just get yourself. Hey, man, it's hard enough to figure out this game no matter what year you've been in this league. It's hard to be good all the time to have to worry about other guys trying to do the right things.
Yep, I agree. And look, I truly like this locker room, Joe. It is one of my favorites of all time. 30 years being in pro locker rooms, I love this locker room, but their priorities are all screwed up, and that needs to be corrected.
So now let's get in the other one. I know this is not the final product. Chris made that clear. There's some corners out there we're going to get. We're going to add some more pieces. There's still a lot out there in free agency. I don't know, by the way. I don't know if I agree. There's a lot out there in free agency. But it was said. And then I look at right now, and it's mini camp. We got a few months. But did you take a look at who would play nickel and probably start? If you were to start right now, it'd be Kohu, Duck, and Smith probably would be your starting outside corners and your nickel inside.
Yeah. You know what, Joe, when I look at the Dolphins' cornerback situation right now, including who's on the roster and who's out there in free agency, I think of that Jeff Ireland quote, you remember from Hard Knocks, and I think he was talking about the receivers.
He was.
We have a lot of fours, fives, and sixes, but not a lot of ones, twos, and threes. That's kind of the situation, isn't it? Yeah. I don't like Rasul Douglas as a number one. I don't like Asante Samuel as a number one. Stephon Gilmore, I heard you talk about him earlier, right? He's in his mid-30s, Joe.
Yeah.
There aren't a whole lot of, any of those guys would look good as a number two opposite Jalen Ramsey. But as a number one, and then your number two is going to be like Cam Smith or something like that, they're in real trouble in this cornerback situation. They needed to draft somebody in the first three rounds, Joe. And I'll say this again. I think it was 9 cornerbacks that went in the third round of the draft. None of them were good enough for the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Two in the second round. I get getting 7-9. That's fine. But those four rounders, Joe, you need to get one of them.
I'm sorry about that, Perk. Woody's got terrible timing trying to be a wise guy playing that Jeff Ireland thing for you while you were saying that, man. You were talking about all those corners we couldn't get. Hey, I got to ask you about the Jalen Ramsey thing, and I'm ready to put it to bed whenever it happens. What happened? It was less than a year ago we gave him a guaranteed contract for 2 years, a lot of guaranteed money. What happened all of a sudden a couple weeks before the draft that we come out and say, no, Jalen Ramsey, he wants to be here, but we don't want him. What happened?
You know, Joe, I think this gets back to something that I mentioned when I was on here a while ago, and I was on you and Dave Hyde run, and I just mentioned that the Dolphins need to make a Super Bowl run in 2026, and you got to kind of ridicule me, and I didn't get a chance to flesh it out. But here's why I said that was because, look, you've got this core of players for 2025 and 2026. And after that, Tyreek is going to start costing you too much money. He's on for $51 million next year. Teron has already gone out of the core. Raheem Mostert, Calais Campbell. You have two more seasons. And I think that if you didn't plan on making a Super Bowl run in 2026, then all you're really doing from 2025 and 2026 is playing out the string so you can start your rebuild in 2027. I think that's kind of what Jalen Ramsey looked at. I think he looked at the spending situation. He looked at the 2025 locker room, and he was like, man, we aren't going to win this year. And then I think he thought, well, there's no way we can win in 2026 either. I figured that Jalen and Tyreek, if they looked at the situation, one of them might say, I'm probably not going to make a Pro Bowl for the next 3 years because we're going to be a 500-ish team. We aren't going to make the playoffs. I've got to think about my Hall of Fame credentials. I need to get out of here. I need to go somewhere where I can top off the tank. I've already got my ring. I need to keep, you know, looking good. And I think that Jalen, I think it's a vote of no confidence for the program is what I think this came down to. And maybe, you know, maybe he came to him before free agency and they said, just give us a chance through free agency. And then after free agency, Jalen said, yeah, this thing isn't getting any better. I need to be out of here. So I don't know that Jalen, you know, I believe Chris Greer when he says Jalen didn't make a trade demand. But to me, I think it's probably clear that Jalen wanted something better, a better track for the future. And he just kind of lost confidence in the program.
You know, I don't like to keep bringing this up, but I would love to know what Chris Greer has said to Stephen Ross, because they talk directly. That relationship is a direct call. That, like, hey, we think we're really close to make a run at it. Stephen Ross doesn't want to hear when you're 84, almost 85 years old, you don't want to hear about rebuild.
Nope. Like,
he wants to win now. He wants to get a playoff win. Hey, he gets a playoff win. Can you imagine that celebration for Mr. Ross? He's never had one since he's owned this team. So it comes down to this veteran, this rookie class. We got a lot of guys got to play because there's not a whole lot of depth on this team. I think a lot of these guys are going to have to play. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and that's where I have a problem, Joe, because, look, you needed numbers in this draft, and you had three of the first 98 picks. You turned that into two of the first 37 picks. Six of your eight draftees were fifth, sixth, and seventh rounders, Joe.
Right.
I've gone back and done the research on this. In the Chris Greer draft era, which started in 2016 when he took over the draft, they've had 29 fifth, sixth, and seventh round picks, okay? Five of them have made an impact as rookies, and two of those were Jason Sanders and Blake Ferguson, the kicker and the long snapper.
Yeah.
The odds are not good. When you're talking fifth, sixth, and seventh rounders, Joe, making an impact as a rookie all around the league, that's very low percentage.
Yeah.
So you're basically rolling the dice, hoping. I'm good with Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle in the first round, Jonah Sabanaya, which I know I'm butchering his name, but the guard from Arizona in the second round. But when you trade out of the third or fourth rounds, Joe, when you need volume, I have a huge, huge problem with that. And I don't have a whole lot of faith in and I know people are up high on Jordan Phillips, the fifth round defensive tackle, but I don't have a whole lot of faith in these guys contributing as rookies. It just doesn't happen very frequently around the league and with the Dolphins.
Now, it's a good point. By the way, I agree with you on one and two. We needed two big body guys, and we got them, and they apparently thought he wasn't going to be there at 48, so they moved up to grab him to get a guy that I'm guessing day one is probably figured out, knows it, as he's flying in town knowing that he's going to be a starter this year. Yeah, so that leads me just to a couple of other things here, and I'll let you go. I think we need more depth on the offensive line. I hope we're not done there. How about you?
Oh, my goodness, Joe. That offensive line depth. You know, when they said they were going to invest in the offensive line, it can't just stop at James Daniels, the guard from Pittsburgh, and Jonah Sabanaya, the second-round pick. You're going to have injuries there. And right now, Liam Eichenberg is your number one backup.
Yeah.
And so I have a huge issue with that, Joe. I think if you're going to fully invest in the offensive line, I've said this before, your backups need to be of Isaiah Wynn, Kendall Lamb quality, right? Where you can stick them in there for eight games as a starter and you go, all right, he's not going to make the Pro Bowl, but he's not going to get anybody injured. I don't think their backups are at that level. So, yeah, I've got a problem with the backups there. But look, we know that they're limited resources mostly because of those contract extensions that they handed out. After 2023, you just don't have any money to spend.
Yeah.
But, man, you know you're going to have a – and by the way, you know, hopefully James Daniels is ready for the opener, right? He's coming off that Achilles. He was limited to four games last year with Pittsburgh, or else guess who the starter is? Liam Eichenberg. So you better hope James Daniels progresses very well throughout this offseason.
Yeah, I thought we had more depth last year, actually, the guys we had backing up that helped us out. And Isaiah Wynn's an interesting one. I know he's injured and he came back. I know he's a little frustrated because he had to sit for a couple games before they started putting him back in there with Eichenberg over on that side. But, this thing. Hey, I got to ask you the other thing is Blake Ferguson. Everybody keeps calling him sick. Are you guys just all being polite on this sick thing? That he was sick?
Well, he was on the non-football injury list. So, you know, here's the thing that I get along with Blake. I'm actually going to miss Blake Ferguson. I used to
good guy.
But once he was in the locker room and he's on that NFI list, that non-football illness list, we're not able to talk to him. You can say hi, but you can't. It's a team rule that you can't talk to players who are on injured reserve or who are injured or who are on practice squad. So you would see Blake in there, but you could never, talk to him and, hey, you know, blah. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on with Blake. I'm just gonna call it a non-football illness. I have no idea what it is, Joe.
Yeah. You think it might have had to do anything with that bad snap and maybe a couple of other bad snaps behind it that were at practice and somebody said, uh-oh.
People speculated that he might have gotten the yips, it might have been a mental thing. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever heard of that happening to a center.
It happens in baseball all the time. Happens.
It happens in baseball and it happens in golf. Right.
Yeah, and golf
too. But I don't know. It's a shame.
Well, listen, you haven't been real positive. I just want to let you know. I was kind of getting, this mini camp thing coming in.
Hey.
I haven't talked to you, so I didn't know what your take was going to be. So Omar's been on this rebuild thing. That got it all stirred up. They're not rebuilding. There's no way you keep your GM and head coach and some of the guys they have on that offense if they're rebuilding. Do you agree with that?
I agree 100%, Joe. And I'll say this again. I've written this. Joe, that offense got everything it wanted in the offseason, right? You got your new coach in Bobby Slowick.
Yep.
You got your two starting guards. You got your big running back in Alexander Mattison. You got the drafted running back in Ollie Gordon. You got your big receiver in Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. You got your inline tight end in Farrell Brown. You got your backup quarterback in Zach Wilson. That's not a rebuild. That is strengthening. Everybody is here for the offense. Joe, this offense has got to carry the team, and I'll tell you this.
That's a good point.
I've been saying
there you go, bam.
This offense needs to add an average at least 25 points per game, Joe. Brian Flores averaged 25-3 in 2020 with Ryan Fitzpatrick and Tua as his quarterbacks. Joe Philbin averaged 24-3 in 2014 with Ryan Tannehill as his quarterback. You can't tell me this team shouldn't average more than 25. You're going to tell me Flo and Philbin are better offensive coaches than Mike McDaniel?
No.
Average 25 at least.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of pressure on. By the way, why Slowick's here? To take care of that two deep thing so we stop talking about that friggin' two deep thing. I'm getting tired of hearing about it and how it stopped all our explosive plays. Hey, Perk, always great having you, man. Really appreciate it, man. We went a couple extra minutes, but I thought you were pretty damn good today, man. Thank you.
I was loaded today, Joe. I was loaded. I'm ready. All right, man. We'll do it again.
All right. Chris Perkins, Sun Sentinel Dolphins columnist. Oh, man, breaking down a lot of stuff there.
Why do you get everyone worked up with that Omar thing?
Did they
all fight when they go out there?
Perk and Omar.
Tight. I know they're friends. I know.
They're good friends. Those guys, by the way, all the writers, unlike years ago, they all like each other. They get along, man. They used to about go to – they were ready to throw it down here 20 years ago. 20 years
they
ago.
They like each other?
Yeah.
Really?
The papers, that personality did not match up, and they would go after each other. Hey, I'll tell you what. Let's talk about something really good. Michael Kotche at Choice Mortgage, thank you, man. Thank you for allowing people out there to get mortgages quickly. Get the work done. You're about great service. You're about getting the best rates and taking care of people with all your fantastic programs you put together. That's what happens when you've been around 35 years here in South Florida. I'm talking about Michael Kotche at Choice Mortgage. First-time home buyers, we got you covered with a plan that's going to allow you to get a mortgage quickly and get in the game and get approved quickly. Rates in the fives right now. I want to let you know that self-employed been declined by the banks. Mike Okotsky's got a plan for you. If the banks say no, wait until Mike Okotsky comes along. He'll show you what you can do. Man, I'm telling you right now, go to Google Reviews on the web, Choice Mortgage Reviews. They're saying a lot of nice things about Mike Okotsky, including one of his favorites, a reverse mortgage. If you and your spouse are 62 or older, you qualify. Like a lot of old schoolers, we stay in the same home. We pay it off or almost all of it off. We got all that equity, and now we're going, man, I could really use that money right now. Mike Okotsky can get it done quickly for you. Half the time of the big banks. Call Mike Okotsky at Choice Mortgage. The man has no life. He's always working Saturday and Sunday. He's sitting around waiting for your phone call. The wife's even complaining. He just sits and stares at his phone. Call or text him, 561-441-2730. 561-441-2730. That's Mike Okotsky at Choice Mortgage. MLS 166254. Rates and terms subject to change daily without notice. He's an equal housing lender.
Let's talk with George Richards here on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. George Richards has covered the Panthers for many years. And you can read his coverage at FloridaHockeyNow.com. I thought, George, that the Panthers would have a good chance at winning last night because Stolarz was out. And we were talking about it, and admittedly, all our hockey knowledge is rudimentary. But none of us had accounted for Sergei Bobrovsky not looking like a stellar goalie. So was last night a missed opportunity? And can you speak a little bit on how Bob is playing?
Yeah, I think it was a missed opportunity because there were opportunities, right, in that third period for the Panthers to score on Joseph Woll. And listen, he's the backup just because of how good Stoley's been, right? I mean, Joseph Woll won 27 games with Toronto this season, so he's not your average backup. I mean, they were kind of 1A, 1B in Toronto this year. So he's been a starter. He started against the Panthers in the playoffs 2 years ago and played well. But to your point, yeah, I mean, you had that great opportunity. Mackie Samuskevich had a chance to tie it, hits the blocker, had an open net and went low. There was also a puck that got swept out by McCabe. They would have tied the score. So the Panthers had plenty of opportunities, just like they did, you know, despite kind of sleepwalking through 30 minutes of game one. You saw what the Panthers did the second half of the second and all of the third to get back in that game. So the Panthers can get back in this thing. I mean, they've got, you know, if they win one, you know, they need to get some wins at home, obviously. But now they've got to win four of the next five against a Toronto team that's just much, much different than they were before. They've got better defense. They've got, you know, a coach who's been there before and knows how to handle these situations. And yes, Sergei Bobrovsky just has to make some of those saves. That floater that came in to make it 4-3 last night is certainly a goal he'd like to have back.
You're muted, Crowder.
I don't know how to use this. Maybe Bob can figure out how to use his glove.
We can't criticize Bobrovsky if you can't get your mic on.
Bob, use your knees, Bob. No. Speaking of Bob, George, like 9 goals in 2 games, is there a chance we see what Vanecek, like, would they ever go away from him if he's healthy?
No, I mean, you know, unless he gives up 7 in a game and you pull him, but then you're going to start him the next night. No, Sergei Bobrovsky is the starting goalie. He's done too much. He's played too much. He's won too much. Listen, I think in game one, he was playing small. I mean, that first goal that they scored, he like looked shrunk in the net and, you know, so yeah, listen, I'm no goalie expert, but they'll work through that stuff. I thought Sergei was fine last night, just like Paul said, aside for that fourth goal, the goals that Toronto got, you know, were 2-on-1s. I mean, those are hard goals to stop when you're playing the puck and then they pass it and you're out of position. But Joseph Stoll made those saves last night for Toronto, at least when it counted. And listen, if Mackie Samuskevich scores that goal, maybe it's a different situation. Perhaps Florida ends up pulling that one out. But hey, give credit to Joseph Woll for winning that game for Toronto. And he's the guy right now. They said today in Toronto that Stolarz wasn't going to fly with the team to Fort Lauderdale. So it's Joseph Woll tomorrow and probably in game four. And then we'll see what happens after that. But, listen, they're not going to Vanacek. If Spencer Knight was here, maybe we're having that conversation a little bit, but he's not. It's not Spencer Knight. It's Vitek Vanacek and versus Sergei Bobrovsky. They're going to take Sergei 10 times out of 10.
Does that satisfy you, Solana? Because Solana was highly critical yesterday. He was calling for Bob to hit the wood. And Solana even said, what'd you say? That, hey, Bill Zito, maybe you shouldn't have traded away Spencer Knight, but I would submit to you, George, that trade kind of was a really good trade, getting Seth Jones. And I
understand, you know, why the trades were made. And GR, I wasn't necessarily critical of those trades when they were made. But
does anyone call you GR, George? Because we've had this running conversation.
I get that online. never to my face.
The last couple times we've had you coming on, Solana gets excited. He's like, oh, GR, cool. And
I get that online.
Who calls this guy GR?
GR.
GR, yeah. GR, yeah. That's me.
They let Stoli kind of just walk, and I get it, right? But then they have Spencer Knight, and then they traded him, and I'm happy with Seth Jones. I like the Marchand move. Like, I realize why those decisions were made, but now you're in a position, GR, where you need potentially a goalie to come in and spark something because Bob just doesn't have it right now. I don't know. It just seems like we kind of just figured, oh, Bob was unbelievable last postseason run. He'll do it again this year, and here you are. You're down 2-0.
Listen, the thing with Spencer Knight was he was not tradable at the beginning of the year. Nobody knew what Spencer Knight was going to bring to the Panthers. That, you know, with a $4.5 million contract, Spencer was untradable at the beginning of the year. But once he started playing and people were like, oh, that Spencer Knight is back. You know, he was, you know, able to be a big piece in that Seth Jones thing. And if, you know, the reason why they couldn't keep Stolarz last year was because they had $4.5 million invested in Spencer Knight. And last year when Spencer Knight was playing in the AHL, they were paying him $4.5 million and they were paying Stolarz one. So now moving forward, you're going to be able to find the next Anthony Stolarz. Maybe it's Vanacek. I don't know. But I trust the Panthers goalie department to figure this thing out moving forward.
And George, can GR, I guess, I don't know why we're going with this, but
let's go with it. Why not?
Can refs like decide a series? Because we were talking about it earlier in the show. It seems like they're not letting the teams get physical, some ticky-tack crap. Like, it's no conspiracy theory, but it seems like the refs are taking Paul Ball out of hockey.
They're calling weird stuff. That's the thing. They're calling the ticky-tack stuff, and then guys are just getting absolutely blown up, and they're not calling anything. So, just some weird officiating. I don't think it's tilted in any way, at least in this series. Can enough fit? Sure. I mean, they can call, you know, they can call it lopsided for sure. But listen, the Toronto Maple Leafs have taken Paul Ball out of it. Toronto is playing Florida Panther style hockey, and they're not backing down. Florida's forecheck has been, you know, they've been able to keep the puck in their zone for extended periods of time, and Toronto is not letting them do that. Toronto's keeping the puck. Toronto's turning the tables on Florida, at least in the first two games. So we'll see if that changes starting tomorrow night in Sunrise. But no, it's not officiating. It's Toronto. Toronto has come to play, and they've come to play the right way, and they are matching the Panthers hit for hit.
It doesn't sound to me like you give the Panthers a ton of chance to win this series just based on the first answer you gave during the segment where you said now they've got to win 4 out of 5. And the way you said it was kind of dismissive. You don't think they're going to win this series, do you?
Oh, no, I think they can. Yeah, they can. Yeah, if any team can do it, it's the Panthers. I mean, and at the end of the day, these are still the Toronto Maple Leafs. And this, you know, you've still got Joseph Woll, as good as he's been. You know, he's not a Vezina winner by any means. I mean, it's like getting into a team's bullpen after you face their starter for seven innings. You feel like you've got a chance. Now, Florida can score on this guy. They did it in game one. They scored, what, three goals in the third period against Woll. So, yeah, they can put goals up. They just need to clamp down and not get into a track meet with this team, because there's a lot of high-end talent on this Toronto team. But Florida's deeper. Florida's got a better skilled players, aside from like the Austin Matthews, who's one of the top players in the NHL. You know, they just need to get back on track a little bit, and maybe they do that in Sunrise. Listen, if all things go according to the way the Panthers, they're going to get three games at home, three and four, and then game six. So yeah, they can pull this off if the Panthers can. You know, the Panthers could pull the reverse sweep. Look, Toronto was up 3-0 on Ottawa in the first round and was completely dominating that series. And Ottawa won two straight and got right back into it. So there's no doubt Florida can do that as well.
I guess, how can we see you tonight, Goldie? You know the schedule better than I do.
You got it done, Hawk. I believe it's 5:15 on the Panthers Instagram account. We get thousands of people on there. It's very entertaining. Most of the comments I cannot read on the Instagram, but people are, I mean, you could send me whatever you like. I mean, you think
sounds like our text line, Goldie. Our text line, Goldie, is nothing I could ever read on the air.
Exactly. Like, I sometimes leave a, hey, Bill Bob in Orlando, nice comment. It's not getting on, though, buddy, okay? So we have a good time with it. We really do. And then Scripps is really stepping up in a huge way, Hawk. We got Jessica Jobo and Randy Moeller in the studio. 30 minutes before every playoff game, myself and Katie Engelson covering at the site. Katie's going to talk to Anton Lundell tonight for the pregame show. I'm going to talk to Commissioner Gary Bettman, who will be at the game. So 30 minutes before every game throughout the playoffs. So tonight, of course, as you said, that means at 6:30 for the Scripps Sports Panthers pregame show.
Scripps has stepped up, by the way. I love when there's a local presence, yes, even when you don't have the actual rights to broadcast the games. Obviously, yep, you can listen to the game here on 560 QAM with Doug Plagans, Billy Lindsay. So Wednesday night, tell us your opinion. I was saying yesterday to George Richards, and I think I spoke with Moeller. You know, I thought Wednesday was a real missed opportunity because Anthony Stolarz was out, and I just thought it was a chance to steal a game in Toronto, and I felt like they missed out on that opportunity. Was that, in your mind, a missed opportunity game?
Yeah, I mean, look, any game they lose to me is a missed opportunity because you have to have confidence in this team. I mean, look, you know, game one, I mean, they get that game to 4-3 in the third. They are charging hard. Woll came in relief, and you figure, okay, this is a typical comeback Cats. The Leafs are on their heels, and then right after the 4-3 goal, you know, they go and give one back with one of those odd man rushes, and then they get one back again to make it 5-4 late, and they've got the goaltender pulled. So I thought both, you know, fairly similar. I thought for sure when they tied that game in the third, Panthers are really good the first 5 minutes of the third period, and then Lundell ties it. You figure, okay, here we go. And then 13 seconds later, a very uncharacteristic goal given up. You know, Mitch Marner gets it. And then, you know, Joe Woll made that big save on Sam Iskevich. Panthers kept on bringing it. So overall, you know, when you look at the scoring chances and all those things, the Panthers are fine. And they're averaging 3.5 goals a game. The surprising issue right now is defensively, and that, as we know, number one is correctable with a little bit more awareness on the ice, and number two, getting more saves from Sergei Bobrovsky, which you fully expect him to do after, you know, what he's done the last few years.
And Goldie, I was just going to say, I've been sold and I've watched. So I've talked about, we've talked about with a number of people. This is a defensive team built for the playoffs. The style of play is built for the playoffs. 9 goals in 2 games. That's not what I expected. What's going on? Is it Bob? Is it the defense? What's going on to give up 9 goals in 2 damn games?
Well, first off, there's a few that Sergei would like back. And we know when he's on his game in the playoffs, not only does he make every one of those saves, then he makes 2 or 3 that he's not supposed to make. So, you know, the first 3 goals the other night, not his fault. That's defensive mistakes. 4th goal, sure. he'd like to have that one back. So the bottom line in any playoff series, if you don't get, you know, above average goaltending, you're not going to win the series. So I expect Sergei to bring that to the table in a big way moving forward. You know, defensively, they haven't been on the right side of the puck in a lot of those stretch passes for the Leafs. And, you know, that's just attention to detail. But incorporated in that, Crowder, is that forecheck. They're the best forechecking team in the league. And they just make it miserable on opposing defenses when they have to go back and get that puck. Those defensemen have to turn. They get hit time and time again. And that becomes cumulative, not only in a game and in a series. So some of those chances off the rush, remember, they're limited when you do the job on the forecheck in the offensive zone. It doesn't even get to that point where they could stretch out the game. So I think it's, you know, to your point on the question, it's really twofold and even threefold. So I think they'll have a little bit more awareness, which is what they need in that neutral zone at their own blue line when the Leafs try to stretch the game. But if you get there on the forecheck and you don't let them out of the zone cleanly in the first place, you don't have to worry about that as much. And it just goes without saying, more often than not in this league in the playoffs, especially you get to the second round, there's only 8 out of 32 teams left. You know, very often, team that gets the better goaltending gets the win.
What do we know about injuries? I think I saw Paul Maurice said something today along the lines of, hey, we'll have maybe some game-time decisions based on injuries. The guy who jumps out at me is Matthew Tkachuk. Is he 100%?
You know, he says he is. Paul Maurice says he is. I know what people are watching. I look back at the stats after the game, and I didn't even realize. He played 18 and a half minutes in that game, and he had 8 shot attempts. And he helped set up that, you know, that chance by Sam Iskevich that was stopped by Joe Woll right at the buzzer. So, you know, right at the net, I should say, in the third period, that would have tied the game. So, you know, I think Tkachuk was maybe more active than any of us thought. Matthew Tkachuk's playing. I mean, in my opinion, unless he's really hurt and I just don't know it, I can't imagine he's coming out of the lineup tonight.
And what should be our approach? They got to get nastier. I know the game won, and they were talking about Sam Bennett hitting the goalie in the head, or put Stolarz out and all that stuff. Like, should it be? Because you were talking about the forechecking and, like, just getting a little more physical, because that's what I've heard. And every time we win and every time we, you know, saying we get wins, we always talk about the physicality. Should we get more physical? Can that change the series? Because, be honest, we're down 2-0.
100% it could change a series. And I think that's part of the thing, Crowder, with the forecheck. You know, it's all well and good to get physical. You got to get there, right? You can't make the tackle, you know, a good tackle if you're being pushed, you know, 6 yards beyond the line of scrimmage, right? Crowder's got to get in the backfield. And then all of a sudden, Channing Crowder blew up the play for a TFL. So no difference here. You've got to get there. You don't want to be physical and get put out of position. I do think they're going to have a lot of jump tonight. They did not have that in game one. I thought the start in game two was good. Few penalties, unfortunately, in that opening period. You know, the team I see is a determined team, calm. They have not been down by 2 games in a series since the 23 playoffs. They won one of those series. They lost one of them. So I do think that they know it's not an elimination game, but teams that go up 3-0 in NHL history are 208-4 all time. So it's not an elimination game, but realistically, you need the win. I think you're going to see all of you know what we've gotten to know from this team that has been there in spurts in games 1 and 2.
You know, it's interesting because it sounds ominous, right? If you go down 3-0, it's essentially curtains. But what I said to Crowder earlier was, and I'll ask you if you agree, if they do win tonight, the series is playing out exactly the way that it should, that Toronto holds ice on their home ice and Florida ostensibly holds ice on their home ice, and it becomes a 3-game series. Like, there's so much to me on the line tonight, because if they win, it's exactly the way this series should be playing out, and if they lose, you're really facing an uphill battle.
Look, I thought this series, Hawk, would be 2-1 somebody. I also thought it would probably be 3-2 somebody. I figured this thing is going 6 or 7. So, to your point, that still stays on point. Now, it would have been wonderful. 2-1 goal games, right? In games 1 and 2, you get one of those wins, and you feel a little bit better, because if you lose tonight, then that really got to have it win becomes on Sunday. But I agree with you. And, you know, seeing the forest through the trees, you know, because they weren't complete games by the Panthers in games one and two, and there were some things we don't expect to see from this team, especially the way they, for the most part, dominated Tampa. Seeing the forest through the trees, they're on the road. Things didn't go their way. And you got one-goal games right down to the buzzer and getting scoring chances in the final second. So I think overall they're in decent shape, besides the fact that it's a game tonight where the margin for error, to your point, goes away a lot. Because now, you know, you can't afford to lose a big guy tonight to an injury for half the game or get a five-minute major or something like that happen.
And Goldie, 5-4 win for the Leafs. 4-3 win for the Leafs, 9 goals, 7 goals, second game. Do the Panthers want it to get there, or do we need to see more 1-2, 2-1, 0-1? Do we need to see those games for the Panthers to get back on top?
You sound like Paul Maurice Crowder, except you left out the adjective he used. He uses 2-1 filthy. That's what he liked to say. Muck it up. Muck it up. Make it dirty. You don't need to be entertaining and have it go coast to coast in 5-4 games, to your point. And I think we're going to see that team tonight. I think they'll be able to control, pay more attention to detail on that stretch game for the Maple Leafs. A lot of those goals are off the rush. The Panthers, when Paul Maurice came in, remember that first press conference? His comment that stood out to me the most was, you know, we don't want to take the speed out of the Ferrari here, but you got to learn to drive in the rain a little bit. That was his key, you know, to slow down the other team. And they've done a great job. They're the number one rush team in the NHL defensively the last few years. That's why they're the champs. And, you know, I'm as surprised as anybody that they have not done that to their capability the first two games. But one thing we've learned, okay, and all we got to do is go back, what, 10 and a half months after game 6 in Edmonton. Everybody was nervous as heck for 48 hours, and they played one of the best games they could play in Game 7 coming back. So this, to me, as far as a, quote, bounce back, pales in comparison to what they have to do. And this reminds me more, guys. Remember last year in the Eastern Conference Final, they lost Games 2 and 3 to the Rangers in overtime, both games, and they were down 2-1, but they were playing well. It reminds me more of that than the recovery there, you know, they have to make from the Stanley Cup final. So I think, to your point, Crowder, not going to be a lot of room out there tonight. Crowd will be juiced up. I think it'll be physical, and I think it'll be a dirty, filthy, low-scoring Panther win, which is just the way they like it.
Yeah, just the way they like it. Tonight in Sunrise, it is Game 3. It's a 7 o'clock puck drop. You can hear the game here on 560 QAM. You can watch local pregame coverage on Scripps, which is Channel 39, Dayton Broward, South Florida's 9, Palm Beach County, and you can watch the Florida Panthers Instagram page for Instagram Live with Goldie and the entire cast of characters getting you ready for Game 3. Real quick, Goldie, because I know you're a music and concert fan like I am, are you going to see Billy Idol and Joan Jett if the schedule will allow? Are you going to see Billy Idol and Joan Jett at the Amerant Bank Arena next Tuesday?
I sure as hell hope not, because I'm hoping I'm on the plane to Toronto for Game 5. So if
let's say that you're not, for whatever reason, the plane gets canceled, the game gets moved one day.
Okay.
Would you go see that show?
Oh, 1,000%. I'd cut off my right arm to go see that show. What are you kidding me? Idol, baby, let's go.
Yeah.
Who's that?
The only thing better is if Debbie Gibson was opening for Joan Jett, and we'd have all three.
Oh, I mean, now you're speaking my language, Goldie. Do you know who I bought tickets for the other day? I bought tickets for David Lee Roth coming to Hard Rock Live.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you ever seen Van Halen with either David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar?
I saw Van Halen back in the 80s at Madison Square Garden, one of the first concerts I ever went to, believe it or not.
So that was DLR back then, right?
That was forever ago. I was a teenager. Yeah.
Holy mackerel. Yeah, David Lee Roth is 70 years old now. And looks
like all those guys now are old hockey. You'll love this. First concert ever that I went to, Huey Lewis in the News opened up for Lionel Richie, the Dancing on the Ceiling tour. First concert ever.
What a great bill that is. Huey Lewis in the News and Lionel Richie?
Holy at Madison Square Garden.
Girl. Yep. That's a great yep. show there, Crowder. Crowder, they don't make tours
what
like
are
that
you
anymore.
What talking about?
My first concert by myself, you know, without my parents, just with friends, was the Jackson's Victory Tour at Comiskey Park in Chicago.
Wow.
The absolute last row was $30 a ticket. The absolute last row, I brought binoculars to stare at the screen, the scoreboard screen, because I couldn't come close to seeing the stage.
Yeah, yeah, there was some, I'll tell you what, I remember one, I'm going probably early 90s, maybe 90, Eric Clapton opening for Elton John at Shea Stadium in the upper deck, section 46 that night. Yes.
I mean, to see a concert at Madison Square Garden or Shea Stadium, I mean, that's something special. That's something special.
I did see Run DMC at Madison at Nassau Coliseum on Long Island. That was a fun one, too.
Was that the Run DMC Beastie Boys tour? Because I saw that at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago.
I just have four words to leave you with. Whose house? Runs house.
Runs house. Perfect way to punctuate it, Goldie. Perfect way to punctuate it. We love you. Have a good broadcast tonight. Again, Scripps tonight, pregame 6:30, and go Panthers, Goldie.
See you, fellas. Thanks as always.
First of all, I don't normally get upset about hockey because I'm not real clear on the rules all the time, so I'm not going to be one of those stupid fans that reacts to something without fully understanding. So sometimes I remain calm, but I do get mad at a couple of things. One, is it me or the Panthers always seem to get caught in an odd man rush or give up a shorty, which is the same as an odd man rush to me?
Yeah, it happens. I mean, they play a very aggressive style.
Okay, so that and so from that standpoint, that's normal.
Which is why there's not a lot of shot tolls on Bob, and he's going to have to come up with a couple of key ones.
Great
and
saves,
I think everybody's been like,
Bob's got to play better.
He does have to play better, but I would say, you know, it's been like half on him, half on the defense. Like,
right.
They put themselves in bad positions. But the thing that's, I got to be honest with you, if I could call somebody out here, it's the Panthers fans. And I don't know if I'm like in a social media echo chamber, but I just feel like they're acting so soft after a couple of losses.
Right.
First of all, these haven't been, they got off to a really bad start. But these haven't been blowouts. They've had one awful period. They've had one awful period. Wall yesterday, amazing third period by him.
Oh my goodness.
Give credit to the Maple Leafs. I don't know if you guys know this. They won the division. So it's not like you're taking on a wild card team here. You're taking on a really good team. And yeah, they out physicaled the Panthers last night. Mm-hmm. They took the game to the Panthers last night. They played tremendous.
My second point. Like it.
Yeah.
What? Go ahead.
No, tell. No, do tell. No. What's your second point?
What in the Sam hell is embellishment?
It's like flopping.
Can you flop with your face up against the glass?
Well, that's why everybody thought that was a stupid call. It was an unbelievably atrocious call by them.
Like it's like somebody having a tap out and then the guy goes, stop faking it.
Yes. Yeah, they basically said he was faking it.
Right, and so I'm not...
Which Rodriguez is not a faker. He's not going to do that.
The other reasons are the reasons why they lost. But you can't tell me there was a chance if the Panthers would have went up on a power play. Because they did score in 5 seconds on the power play.
I felt, you know, that was a little bit of a thing noticeable because they really did start off once again, like, getting a lot of penalties. And I almost wonder if that took a little bit of the gas out of them from their aggressiveness. I just didn't feel like they had that enforcement like they typically did. Now, I think Toronto had a part of that for sure, but I thought after the frustration of how many penalties they've had to kill, and the penalty kill had been good, but it finally kind of bit them in the ass. I just didn't think that we saw them play with that same ferocity in this game.
And here's the other thing, though. And here's why in games like this, you have to be fair about your calls. Because if you call the physical play against one team and they go docile and the other team stays physical, you've now given them an
advantage.
That's
the game, though. That's the game. That happens in every sport.
Really?
That's why that happens. Why do you think coaches bitch about calls all the time?
Like, right. I got you.
It absolutely does.
Especially for the Panthers. Like, let them play or let's have a penalty fest.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. Like, yeah, there have been some roughings, but there's been some dumb trippings, too. I mean, Kulikov sent one, you know, delay a game that he sent into the seats. Like, Kulikov, dude, what are you doing? Like, two last night? Come on, man. The one guy who I did think it got to last night, though, because I thought he was a ghost and he's never a ghost, and I wonder if all of this got to him. I thought Bennett was, like, non-impactful. Like, and that's very rare.
He went mush? He went soft?
I just think it's...
Cautious.
I don't think we...
Let's put it that way. He went cautious.
I don't think we realize what it was, because you got to remember, this guy's from there, and I don't think we realize, and I don't think we have a grasp on how pissed off people were. We saw the people, what they were doing to his puppy channel.
Right.
Like, I don't know what was going on around town with all of that. Like, he says he wants to be the bad guy, but when you're actually the bad guy,
you don't.
I wonder if that took a little steam out of him, too. And then, this is the thing everybody's really worried about, but I also don't know really a gauge on this, is Tkachuk.
How hurt is he?
But this is the thing with Tkachuk that I can't really tell. You know, Tkachuk's a little bit of a bait and switcher. Like, every once in a while, he just goes through lulls, and you're just like, where's Tkachuk? And then there'll be two games where he scores four goals.
Yeah, you can't score three goals in the first three games of the playoffs, and everybody's going like, oh, Tkachuk is back, and then all of a sudden now he's not.
But I also don't know if there's wear down. Like, how did he come back? Because that kind of happened in the Four Nations, you know? And so I will acknowledge he doesn't look as speedy. He looked like he was laboring last night for sure. But also I know that he can he's a strange player in that his hot runs are like typhoons, and then like you can kind of go away for a little bit because he does a lot of that stuff of being in the right place at the right time. Those Yanks plays, and yeah, just wasn't there last night. But the thing I want to say is, look, you're really not going to give this team the benefit of the doubt to come back?
No.
Because I mean, a lot of...
I just watched the Stanley Cup Finals where a team came back and down 3-0 and went to game 7. I'm definitely not worried.
Under Paul Maurice, they've not been in the situation of being down two games. They didn't do it all last year. They haven't been down since the final against Vegas, which they were banged up. And the one before that, they, of course, had the incredible comeback against Boston. But yeah, they didn't lose. If these were games in their own building, they lost. Okay, I could understand. You'd be frustrated. You had to go to Toronto with a hostile environment, dude. You lost in Toronto, very close game yesterday. They always had a response to you. Cats got out to a good start. I'm gonna give Champion the benefit of the doubt. Like, yeah. I feel like they deserve that, and everybody's like, Bob is washed. Tkachuk's too brill. Only Marchand stepping up for us. There's Rhino. Well, Verhaeghe.
But guess what?
Swaggy.
Guess what?
Don't make me do it.
You know where they get that from.
What's that?
You.
No.
Because you'll be quick to throw somebody to the Yotes after a couple of games.
Not this team.
You did it last year. What?
Dude, well, he was
slumping. Wait.
He was slumping.
Wait.
He deserved it.
Did you or did you not send somebody to the Yotes last year?
I really want you to stop doing this because words are important. I threatened to send him to the Yotes if he did not get it together, which he did. You're welcome.
Vlad, do you see why this is difficult sometimes? Because he throws a word
Nothing's
in there.
Difficult for him today.
No, if me? You throw something in there. You throw a word or two in there.
Words matter.
So it gives you, so you can get out of
words matter.
No, listen, a word missing or a word included does matter. So if he did say he threatened, he's threatening. He's not actually doing.
Yep.
He's threatening.
Yep, exactly.
But he is the sorcerer with words, man. He is a wizard with words.
He's a sorcerer.
I don't deny that. We'll take a break. More to come here on the show. We're back after this.